Hi, and welcome to Women CEO in Reflection, a podcast dedicated to personal growth and mental health discussions with women CEOs across the globe. It's here where inspired women get candid about what drives them to succeed and the personal challenges they've encountered on their path to success. So if you're a woman on a mission, this is the podcast you don't want to miss. So sit back, relax, and let's get candid. Hi, and welcome to Women CEO in Reflection. I'm your host, Marisa Jones, and I'm joined by my co-host, Neil Haley. Today's guest is Jennifer Sappo. She's a recovering overachiever who overcompensated financially after living with a mother who struggled financially after a divorce. She describes her childhood home as one that pretended tough subjects like rape, death, sex, and of money didn't exist. Jen is driven to succeed, and through her curiosity and astonishing ability to problem solve, propelled her to success in financial services industry, winning awards while often being the only woman leader in the room. Jen started UTOR Wealth after tiring of long-winded meetings and overemphasis on products and sales quotas. UTOR is Latin for to use, to employ, and to enjoy. Jen believes that every dollar we touch and how we send it out into the world is shaping both the world we live in and the one we aspire to. And every woman deserves to do it intentionally and with confidence. And that's exactly where she helps her clients. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you, Marisa. Thank you for having me. This is such, it's an honor because the work you're doing is so important.
So I really resonate a little bit with your story, and I want to, you know, talk about how that led to what you do today. But, you know, my mom was, she worked, but she was a stay-at-home mom. She didn't have more than an eighth grade education, and she was dependent on my abusive dad. He was an abusive alcoholic, and so she could never leave. And how that imprinted me was I was always, you know, I'm going to be independent and never have a man take care of me, which served me good because I was very successful and always made a lot of money. But it didn't serve me good in my two marriages where I created boundaries around that didn't serve me. And what I realized over time was that the boundaries of having my own money and keeping my own money also still created resentment for partners that I had that didn't live up to my expectations of what they should do with money. And so I actually disserviced myself. And so from that, I had to reset and go, what are my values around money in a relationship? And I realized I just wanted financial stability. And I spent 50 years doing completely the opposite, you know? So tell me with that, how, you know, what, you know, same. Growing up with your mom, tell me how you got to running your company.
Well, and exact same. So everything you just described, I experienced. However, maybe I had like a couple years, I had the aha moment a couple years before you, in that I am married, my second marriage. And we still have contentious arguments about money, but two things I have learned that have been much healthier than how I was dealing with it before, which was similar to you in that I have to be independent and it has to be mine and I have to have the say in this. I'm learning more interdependence, and he has taught me things in our 7 years of marriage of really how to balance between enjoying today and enjoying for the future. And also just, there's a great book, actually, I think Jennifer Segadelli is the author. It's called Couples That Work. And that taught me interdependence and that it's okay for our marriage to have seasons, where one person is more, you know, earning forward and the other person is more family forward or whatever the case is. But like you mentioned, they have to be open discussions, and we have to be open and ready, you know, to kind of take those journeys, even though they're really uncomfortable or they can be.
It absolutely did. So when women come to you, I'm sure there's probably a wide range of financial kind of issues, right? Financial trauma, they're trying to figure out their life. Like, what are some of the different ways that they come to you? What are some of the, what are they looking for when they come to you?
Everybody when they're coming to me, everybody's looking for financial confidence. They're looking for, am I doing it right? Am I missing something? Am I behind? They're looking for answers to those questions. And I would say, like, my clients come from an array of backgrounds, you know, some similar to ours, some from, you know, stable homes and stable incomes. But they had never really, like, been proactive or interested in financial conversations. And I think even people who are, in general, people who are kind of comfortable with money, the way that our financial system is set up, the way that consumerism is set up, is to make you uncomfortable. Because if they can make you uncomfortable with something, they can plug a product in as the solution. So I help people simplify it. I help people understand, you know, kind of the basics. I help them understand what's possible. And then after our engagement, the transformation, my hope is the transformation is they're confident with every decision they make going forward.
I like the financial confidence, because you always have, you hear these gurus and they're like, oh, you got to have the money mindset and you have to think abundance and you have to think abundantly. And I'm sorry, that don't work for me. So
I love that.
I like that.
Yeah. And I say that financial success is more about systems than anything else. So if you set yourself up with some basic systems, you're going to set yourself up for success. There's such a small number of factors that we can control. A lot of the financial factors we cannot control. We can't control interest rates. We can't control economic cycles or market cycles or any of those things. We can't control corporate layoffs, right? But what we can control, to a lot of extent, if you're an entrepreneur, but even if you're an employee, to some extent, your income, your expenses, and how you're investing the difference, and then how you're protecting it in between. Those really are the main components of a healthy financial life.
What would you say? So, you know, talking about mental health and money, that's always been, you know, besides the fact that my father always held money over my head, you know, it's like, you do this and I'll give you everything I have, you know, kind of stuff, but I think that played into a lot of, like, my
power.
Mental health. It's a power.
That's
grab,
a power
right?
dynamic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but what that did to me was it created this scarcity and you know, lots of money and then scarcity and then this fear, even when it wasn't there, right? Even when it wasn't real, you know, even when I had money coming in, there was always this scarcity. But then I would fight it when I would go through my mental health kind of downfalls, you know, because I suffer from depression on and off. I would go shopping and just spend and spend and spend. So, like, the scarcity would come into my mindset, and then I would go shop and spend thousands of dollars on clothes and, you know, just all kinds of stuff that I didn't need. How does that play into, how do you help people with that?
Yeah. Well, I think that could come from a couple different places. I've given exercises to clients in the past where, in your situation, if there was a cycle of big spending, I might offer you an exercise. It's like, go to the store, check your account balance before you walk into the store, and then just go to the store and take inventory of every single thing that you could buy today, that you could just write a check. I can afford. Right. Because I think that when we come from, and I came from, right, financially insecure household too, one of the tendencies could be, oh, I have the money, I better spend it now because I might not have the money a month from now or 2 months from now or 3 months from now. And that could be conscious or unconscious. So once it's in the bank, it's like, oh, okay, I have it now, I better spend it now. But if you take that power back, you say, I have the money, you can walk through a store and be like, I can afford all of this. I choose wisely, right? What I truly want or what I don't want. But I could walk in here. I remember the day that, you know, I had a lot of money in my bank account and I was like, I could write a $50,000 check today. I could buy anything in this store. There's not a single thing in this store that I couldn't afford. And it was a really empowering moment. So that might be one. Another tactical exercise I might offer in a situation like that is that one of my favorite hacks is we always hear the advice, you know, pay yourself first. One of my favorite hacks, and this is especially true, this worked better for me at a corporate job than now as a self-employed person, but have 100% of your income direct deposit it into a savings account, not a checking account. And then only have whatever your kind of monthly budget or your spending plan, whether it's 5,000 a month, 10,000, whatever yours is, only have that amount deposited into your checking account every month. And that way, you're giving a signal in your systems. I'm the most important thing here. I'm the director of this money. It is not the director of me. And you're putting that just what you're going to spend in the checking account. Now, every bonus that you weren't expecting or every pay raise, the default for that money is for it to go to savings instead of checking. And that just kind of automates it. If you can keep your hands off the savings account, it kind of takes that ability away of just going in the store and spending however much money is in the balance.
That's great. Really great advice, because you're immediately thinking it's going to savings and then I need a little extra to pay some bills instead of the opposite.
So Marisa, I wanted to add a question for Jennifer, and the fact that what you help them is people just have to understand there's only a certain amount of money, right? At the end of the day, and you need to save for specific things. You got to save for other things, and that you have to be responsible with your money. And it's so difficult for people to do that yeah. because ultimately they see we'll never have enough money. And the truth is unless you look at it, entrepreneur business lifestyle, you're only going to be a certain amount of income and you're going to get to a certain level. And then you're going to have to learn to save and save for emergency funds, keep money up and save for retirement, which retirement now is going to be not just for 10 years. It's going to be for 30 or 40 years that people mm-hmm. are living longer and longer. So the way that our parents lived is not the way we can live anymore. And that we can't think, we're going to save $3 million for retirement. That's not going to last you 30 years. Especially yeah. Social Security, all these different things. So you really have to be a different type of financial planner, Jennifer, with your clients than ultimately people that were doing financial planning 10 or 20 years ago. Do you agree with me on that?
The strategies that worked for our parents and our grandparents, absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that, that those strategies aren't going to work for us. I would challenge the thought on there's only so much money. There really is. Money is kind of a funny thing. And I think this is part of why we have such a hard time with it, is that, money, a dollar bill is a tangible thing. But more than a tangible thing, money is a concept. And especially for entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs are people who create. Like, you create something new, then you create new wealth, right? An iPhone didn't exist before. Somebody created it, and that created an enormous amount of wealth. And there is more than enough for everybody from any kind of quantifiable way. There is enough money. So the most important thing for us is, as money comes into our lives, all of it that comes in, the first most important decision we need to make is, how much of this money do I want to enjoy today? And how much of this money do I want to enjoy for my future self? I want to put away for my future self. And that future self is a lot harder for some of us than others of us. So that's where I'm like, put a mechanism. That's why I like systems. Put a mechanism in there so it's a default. And generally speaking, if you want to retire at a normal retirement age, then 15 to 20% of your income needs to be going to your future self. If you're starting at zero, that's a perfect place to start. Your next step is 1%. Your next step is not 15%. So take the 1% step now, and then 6 months from now, 12 months from now, do 2%, and then do 3%. And then, you got a raise. It was defaulting into savings anyway. Maybe now you can jump 3 or 4%. And so just work on incremental progress. Let go of perfection.
I think what aligning it to the values, because I think most people don't know what their future looks like. So it's hard to plan for something that they don't. It's like, I have this retirement and I have no idea what it looks like. Mm-hmm. I help my clients I have a coaching program. And at the end, I always help them decide, I help them create a vision for what their future is. What does it look like? Mm-hmm. Are you sitting by the beach writing books? Are you, teaching classes? Are you still working? What does that look like? But there's a financial aspect to it. And you can envision that it's like, oh, I'm going to need X amount of money because here's how my life is going to be. And most people can't envision what their future is like because they never really spent time thinking about it. It's just this surreal retirement, right?
Especially if you're struggling with mental health, right? Especially if you're in so much pain, physical or psychological, that you believe, and I'm saying this out of experience, that you think dying would be easier than living, then yeah, you're not thinking about your future self at all. Right. you're barely getting through the day, right? You're barely getting out of bed. And if you're listening, if your listeners are listening and that's where they are right now, I would tell them that is an okay place to be. If you're having a hard time getting out of bed and you think dying would be easier than living, I have been there. It's not a fun place to be. You don't need to worry about your money in that situation. You need to worry about your mental health. There is no future. There is no account, for 10 years from now or 20 years from now, if you don't have a body and a brain, you know, 10 years from now.
You have to heal. Absolutely. So tell me what you do to maintain mental health and how have you learned to kind of pivot or manage the last couple of years with all the chaos in the world?
Yeah, I think my best learnings with mental health have been, one of the things that's really helped me a lot is learning history. Because I think sometimes, you know, what's going on in the world, I think, is crazy. And then I read about what has gone on in history and I'm like, oh, still crazy. And so that has been helpful for me. Like a recent example of that is that Nixon had pushed for legislation for universal basic income. They called it something else, but he had passed legislation for that. And there was like this mental health exercise I went through with, like, how different would the world be today if that legislation had passed back in the 70s? My sister may still be alive if that were the case. So just learning history for me is a fun thing. It also reminds me that everything around us is made up. Somebody made it up at some point, like somebody created it. GDP, FICO scores, like all of those things are like rules that just somebody decided should be a rule at some point. And so we can make better rules, and we can change rules, and all of that is changeable. So that helps me. The most, again, tactical is learning how to say out loud, "I need," and that is a phrase that I never said, you know, with my upbringing being 100% totally dependent and being able to fix everything on my own was how I found value in myself and in the world. And then when my dad and my sister died within 60 days of each other in 2020, I could barely function. So I was forced into a position where I had to be able to say, I need somebody to watch my two kids so that I can cry in the shower for an hour. I need somebody to make dinner because I can't. I need somebody else to do the dishes because they're not going to get done. Like I can't stand up long enough to do dishes right now. So just learning and practicing saying I need, even today, you know, we fast forward almost 2 years later, a little over 2 years later, like it's such a powerful and simple phrase. Like I need a glass of water. I need a nap. I need, you know, a snack. I need a break. And then the last thing for me, and you can relate to this, is writing. So I just joined a group that was like writing your memoir for healing. So I'm in the midst of that, but
yes,
yep. You've been on that journey. And poetry for me has been poetry has been transformative for me to be able to describe what my body is feeling, how I'm experiencing something. And that's been transformational.
Wow. So poetry related to the body, you write about how you're experiencing. I'm just thinking, because like most of my program, everything I do is around mind, body, and emotions. What am I thinking? How is it expressing itself in my body? And what are the emotions behind it? When you journal those three things, somehow, when you start journaling, what's going through your mind? How does my body react when I think about it? And what are the emotions behind it? It's such a release. And so I love, no one's ever said, like, related the body part to the, you know, expressing it through poetry. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the expressing my grief and like what my grief felt like, you know, I wrote a poem called Death Decomposed Me, right? Because I felt like I was underground under a bunch of weight. And it was a stinky, gooey, terrible mess, heavy, stinky, gooey, terrible mess, with creepy crawlies and all of that. So that was like describing a bodily feeling. And then my sister died of diabetic ketoacidosis because she was trying to lose weight rapidly. And I have so much anger. But the thing that helped me more than anything with the anger is like writing a poetry about my rage at a society that says, if you're a woman, you're only valuable if you're thin and beautiful and you fit a very, you know, narrow. She was both of those things anyway, but that her self-worth was such that she put herself in a position that killed her so that she, you know, felt like she had value walking on this planet today.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
It's all the stuff around us, the world, like the rules that are created for us really don't benefit us. And that's my biggest struggle is I never really felt like I fit in this world. And it's like, and my one of my girlfriends last year, she said, you know, all this stuff around you, it's just all static. And ever since she said that, it's just made me realize like, you're so right. Like, it's just, I use it all the time now because if we start absorbing it, it really affects us. It can destroy us. It really can.
So I'm sorry. I'm literally working on belonging with my therapist right now. Because what I learned from her is that my sister and I were part of the same dynamic, right? She had different ways of finding her worth, but my way of finding my worth was overachieving. It was producing, yes. It was fixing, right? It was being independent. That was my way of finding my worth. And my therapist is like, you know that you have worth regardless. Like, you don't have to do any of that stuff and you have worth. And she gave me a great visual. She was like, you know, I was telling her about this big conference I'm going to be on a panel of. And I'm like, I don't know if I belong there. It's crazy. I'm going to this conference. And she's like, it was a much longer conversation, but the visual she gave me was about, you know, my level of competence and what I was contributing to the conference. And she's like, and look, your self-worth, while you're there speaking, your self-worth is going to be on a hammock, drinking some tea, completely unchanged. I was like, I'm going to have that forever. I'm going to use that forever. Self-worth
is completely
unchanged. The being me and the doing me are not the same.
You have to be an observer in life. You have to just, you know, when you can separate that. And you know, as far as belonging, that was something I struggled with. And I did a lot of work around that. It was this need to belong. And I realized that we all belong everywhere. We all are deserving and belong to step in every single room. And it's up to us to decide if we want to step out. And, you know, I know a lot of women struggle with that. So thanks for bringing that up. You've been really great sharing a great conversation. I can go on for hours because my head is like, all these things you talked about, I want to talk about, but we are at a time. So where can people find you, Jen?
Utor Wealth, UTORWEALTH, utorwealth.com. I've got a lot of resources on the website and the top right, there's a book here. So I'll spend 20 minutes with anybody, even if you think you can't afford a financial advisor, you don't need one or you don't want one. 20 minutes on my calendar and I can point you in the right direction or tell you whether or not you're on the right track.
Perfect. That's a great gift. Very nice. Well, thank you for being on the show. Much appreciated. And thank you.
Thank you for having me and for what you're putting out into the world. I think the more we talk about this, the healthier we'll be.
Yes. trying to make this a casual conversation so that everyone can talk about it and feel comfortable. So thanks again. It's been great having you here.
Thank you for listening to Women CEO in Reflection. To reach out to one of our guests, their contact is in the description of the show. Do you want a total mindset transformation? Apply to Mindset Warrior, The Art of Intentional Thinking, my personal coaching bootcamp at iamamindsetwarrior.com and schedule your call with me today. Thank you.